Hello and welcome to the Charmed Life Podcast. This podcast is all about magic, metaphysics, mysticism, and the unconditional love of the universe. And I am your host here. My name is Trisha Carr. Well, everyone, I want to just tell you a little bit about what I am up to before we get into this phenomenal experience, this conversation with my guest, who, by the way, is named Coot Blackson. I want to let you know that I do have openings in my calendar for my empathic channeling sessions, which is reading, yes, intuitive reading. It's healing, and it is just so much of an alignment with your soul blueprint. And the soul blueprint is something that I think Coot and I are actually kind of talking about when we in this episode, we talk about purpose and we talk about freedom, we talk about surrender. And we have the sense that we're aligned with those frequencies because they align with our soul blueprint. And the soul blueprint is this idea of you're always going to be doing it because it's how you were designed. And that's what my sessions are about. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but I just want to drop that seed and make the invitation because I recognize that I need to make the invitation, the idea of being in the right place at the right time. And so here's me being someplace to be able to meet with you. So check that out. And I do want to give a special shout, an invitation, and shout really because I'm so excited having the most fun with my Modern Mystic Life coaching portal. And this is a very low cost, very high value, keeping it low cost and super easy so that it can best serve. I mean, ease is another what is the way that we feel freedom. And so that's what the concept is for me. The reason it's easy is because it's delivered right to your SMS texts and you can just go right to the content there. I'm giving content that is exclusive and premium so that you can access it and all throughout the week in the way that these pieces will help you to be in alignment in your way. And that's why it is definitely a coaching portal, because the way that I have made the changes in my life and having my spiritual awakening is to be consistently on my practice, to be disciplined, and discipline to reframe it and reclaim it is to be a disciple of yourself, your true inner being, a disciple of the universe. And that's the invitation I want to make to you. It's really so affordable. Check the description. You can find it on my website under Work With Me, and you'll see Modern Mystic Life Coaching, and super simple. But you can also click in the description, find the link, and there may be a coupon code in there for you too. It's only $11.11 a month as is. And then I have some coupons now for you to have that first month at only $5.55, live events as well. It's amazing, guys, and I'm having the most fun. Let us get into this episode. Coot Blackson is an inspirational speaker and transformational teacher. Boy, that really comes through in this conversation, let me tell you. Coot speaks at events all around the world, ones that he curates and creates, as well as ones outside of his particular business, including AFEST, the Young Presidents Organization, and the Entrepreneurs Organization. Coot is a member of the Transformational Leadership Council, a select group of 100 of the world's most foremost authorities in the personal development industry. He's the winner of the 2019 Unity New Thought Walden Award and is widely considered a next generation leader in the field of personal development. Coot has a simple mission: to awaken and inspire people across the planet to access inner freedom, live authentically, and fulfill their true life's purpose. So, without further delay, I want to invite you into this conversation with the dynamic Coot Blackson, and I will chat with you on the other side. Well, Coot, I am very excited to connect with you. I've been looking forward to this so much since we got you on the schedule. You are such an inspiration and so powerful, so charismatic as well. So I'm just going to stop talking here in a minute, and I want to turn it over to you because I'm ready to sit and listen to all of the gold that you flow with. So I'm without further delay, let me ask you, could you share with everyone about the work that you're doing and your journey, anywhere you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, people call me a transformational teacher. I started out as a coach. I tell people I don't really coach people. I uncoach people. I uncondition people. I sort of untrain people from the patterns of conditioning that we learn from childhood. And so, you know, from the moment we're born, we're kind of born free. We're born as these free beings, these pure light, pure essence, you know, pure divine expression. And so we're born free, but we're born into a framework and a preset framework of conditioning, and we meet our parents, and our parents, they're just doing the best that they can do based on their childhood and their conditioning and their, you know, upbringing and their childhood. And so we're all born into some level of, let's say, dysfunction. Maybe there's alcoholism, maybe there's mental illness, maybe parents are fighting, maybe there's divorce, there's abandonment. There's always something in this human experience. And so maybe our parents were great people, but they just didn't know how to meet our needs emotionally. And so to me, the conditioning process begins from a very young age, often unconsciously, where the first thing is we learn all sorts of defense mechanisms and strategies to shut down, disconnect, not feel, shut down, disconnect, not feel the pain of what's going on around us as children. And so we start to disconnect from parts of our feelings, parts of ourselves, suppress certain feelings. Those layers of unfelt, unprocessed feelings begin to build up and begin to disconnect us from our true authentic expression, our true light, our true essence, our true power, our true freedom, our true nature. And so we start shutting down as a way to not feel the pain of what's going on around us. But also as human beings, I found that we start learning a strategy, a way of being, to be in the world, the sense of who do I need to be in order to get love and validation. You know, dad says, hey, boys don't cry, or girls don't act that way. So we start to contort ourselves into a certain shape from a very young age, a certain way of being. We develop all sorts of roles and masks and personas, an identity that we hold on to very tightly, that we think this is who we are. Avoid pain, get love, validation, approval, survival mechanism. This way of being that we have been conditioned to be often works for us to function and survive as a defense mechanism when we were 5, when we were 7, when we were 10. But what I found is as we get older, it starts to get in the way. It starts to limit the fullness of our expression, the freedom of our expression. And so the challenge is the shape that we have learned to be and we hold tightly onto and becomes reinforced by society and life, it often becomes who we think we are. Like, we think we are this pattern. We think we are this person. People often say, no, this is just the way I am. It's just, I'm just this way. You know, we become the independent one. We become the nice one. We become the yes person. We become the caretaker. We become the overgiver. You know, whatever it is that we've been conditioned to become to fit in, to get love, validation. For me, as a young boy, I became the perfect son. I became the overachiever. I became the good boy. You know, I was the one that was taking care of everyone. Everyone's like, oh, cool, you're such a good kid. You're such a good boy. And then I got reinforced, but I wasn't even conscious that there were so many parts of my authentic expression that I began to disconnect from. So we develop all of these roles and we think that who we are is who we really are. But what I really like to, in my work, ask people as a question is who you are, who you really are, or is it just who you've been conditioned to be? Because the degree to which we are conditioned is the degree to which we're really not free to choose. We're just reacting from programming from the past, programming from our parents, programming from our traumas, programming from some reactions, not conscious. And so I think part of the work I do is I help people become conscious, to become aware and to become conscious of their conditioned responses and their conditioned patterns so that they can begin to expand and begin to loosen and begin to transform those patterns. And I help people peel away some of the layers that we have built up over time to just function and survive so that they can reconnect with their true essence, reconnect with their true soul, true source, the source of their being, their true selves. And to me, that is real freedom. So I help people get free. And so for me, part of my path began as a young boy because I felt, in so many ways, I felt not free in a sense. For me, one of my first memories that really impacted me was I was always a very empathetic kid. And so I would feel people's pain very deeply. I felt people suffering very deeply. So as a 5-6-year-old kid, I feel people's pain. And there was always this deep desire to alleviate people's suffering, you know? And I didn't know what that would look like, but I just felt like I wanted to help people alleviate their suffering in some way. And also something that affected my being that still affects me now was, I remember being a chubby kid. And I was lost in the crowd. I was born in Ghana, West Africa. My father's from Ghana. My mother's Japanese. I grew up in London. Now I'm in Los Angeles in the US. But I was a chubby kid around age 6, age 7, lost in the crowd. And I'll never forget this crippled woman picking up the sand that this man walks on, wipes it on her face and stands up. And so I grew up in this environment where week after week I was around miracles. So I grew up with this sense of possibility, this mystical environment. Week after week, I grew up seeing blind people see and deaf people hear. The same man who essentially picked up would look at a woman in a wheelchair and say, "Stand up, you're not sick." And he put his hands on them and they would stand up. And so with my own eyes, I saw possibilities, I saw healings. And so this man was my father. He built 300 churches in Ghana, West Africa. He's a very mystical man. He built a huge church in London, about 4,000 or 5,000 people every Sunday. And so when I was age 8, my speaking career began because my father just threw me in the audience and said, "Speak." And I had no idea, no training, no planning, no idea what I was going to say, but words started to flow out of my mouth and I started speaking and people were moved. And so every month, every 6 weeks, I started to speak in front of my father's audience. And then when I was 14, and also at that time, I became very curious and obsessed with trying to understand the nature of reality, the sense of who am I and what's the purpose of life? And is it just to wake up and, you know, wake up, have babies, buy a car, buy a house, go on vacation, and then die? Like, sure, I look around at the world and a lot of things that didn't make sense to me. And so I started questioning as a young boy, like, what is the purpose of all of this? And so when I was 14, I was ordained as a minister in my father's church. Given the man, I was kind of young, but I was ordained as a minister in my father's church, given the mandate to take over my father's spiritual organization, given the mandate to be his successor. And you know that feeling when something doesn't feel aligned, something doesn't feel true, something doesn't feel right. My heart sank the moment it was announced in front of 5,000 people because I knew in my soul that this was not my path. I knew in my soul that this was not my purpose. But, you know, as a young boy, I didn't know how to tell the truth to my father. I didn't know. Like, my fear was if I truly dared to be who I was and spoke my truth, that I would lose his love, I would be outcast, I'd be alone, I'd be abandoned. And if I dared to be myself, then I would be by myself, basically. And so I think so many of us as human beings, out of fear, we don't express our truth. Out of fear, we don't express who we really are. And I think there's a deep pain in that. So I felt this deep pain knowing that my entire life was set out for me. My entire future was set out for me, and it wasn't mine, you know. And so around that time, also, I felt this deep calling to come to America. It took me 4 years to muster up the courage to speak my truth, to acknowledge my truth. But I felt this calling to come to America. I wanted to come to the U.S., Southern California, because this is where I started reading a lot of self-help books from a very young age. Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Eastern mystics, Western mystics. A lot of the Wayne Dyers of the world, the Louis Hayes of the world lived in Southern California. I wanted to come to the U.S. and meet them and learn from them and study with some of them. And so I thought, this is the Mecca for spirituality. Los Angeles, I'm going to come here. And I felt this huge calling, this strong calling. Had no idea how it was going to happen. Had no idea what I was doing, where I was going. All I knew was this is where I needed to be. And I think sometimes your soul guides you in a way that doesn't make sense to your mind, isn't always convenient. But what I found is when you truly follow your soul and you don't betray your soul, you don't compromise your soul, you will always end up in the right place, even though the route that you take isn't the one that you think. And so I looked into my future and I saw that I could be successful by the world's standards. I could be successful by everyone else's standards, but if I didn't have myself, if I didn't have my truth, if I didn't have my own integrity, what kind of success is that, you know? And so I felt such a pain, like if I followed the path that was expected, it was like assault, suicide. I projected into my future, age 20, age 30, age 40, age 50, age 60. And it felt like such a depth of soul suicide that at 18, I had a choice to make. And I spoke to my father, confronted my father. It was terrifying. You know, sometimes people say that in order to follow your true purpose, you have to be fearless. I was terrified. I think you can embrace the fear. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage to be human, to be who you are, to follow your path, even when everything around you seems to be convincing you otherwise. And so I spoke to my father, cut a long story short. We didn't speak for 2 years. He was really disappointed. It was heartbroken. I was heartbroken that I was breaking his heart, but I knew in my heart what I needed to do, and I knew that the path that was calling me was right. And so we didn't speak for 2 years, and I'll never forget feeling so alone, so abandoned by life, like I was given this vision to come to America, this vision to inspire people, but now no family support, no money, no college degree. Like, I felt so alone, and I remember saying a prayer to the universe, and I said, universe, like, if everything that I've been reading about the universe and law of attraction and spiritual, if any of this stuff, if it's real, like, I need to know that this stuff works for real, beyond theory. I need confirmation that I'm on the right path. The next day, someone gives me a magazine called The Economist. I look in the back of the magazine. I see an ad in the magazine that says, the American government has given away 55,000 green cards in the green card lottery. I feel chills in my body. Cut a long story short, I end up winning a green card in the green card lottery. And that's what brought me to the U.S. And two suitcases, $800, 18, 19 years old, showed up, knew no one, and began my life. And it's been a really incredible journey ever since. From there, traveled the world, traveled to Thailand, studied with monks, traveled to Israel, studied with rabbis in a quest to try to find answers. I wanted to really know the truth of the nature of reality, happiness, fulfillment. I wanted to know for myself, not something I read in a book, not something I heard from someone. I wanted to know for myself. And so there came a point where I sold everything, traveled, went, walked the Camino in northern Spain. What ended up in India that really transformed my life, and spent a lot of time in India, and I really connected to something. And it was really out of that that I came back to America and started working with people one-on-one. That grew. People started coming from around the world, and small groups and larger groups, and it just expanded, and, you know, wrote books, and here I am today. And so that really began my journey. And so the last thing I would just say is I think if anyone listening is wondering where they can start, you know, where they can begin, like, what's the first step that they can take to truly begin shifting one's life? Because sometimes when you're going down the path and there's momentum, if the momentum isn't positive, it can seem really difficult to, like, shift the trajectory of your life. And so one of the things I have found that stops us from truly transforming, one of the things I found that stops us from truly breaking through to that next level, are all the lies that we tell ourselves. I think as human beings, in so many ways, consciously and unconsciously, we lie to ourselves about who we are. We lie to ourselves about what we feel. We lie to ourselves about what we want, about what's true. And those lies keep us stuck. We stay in relationships that we know is not right. We stay in career and job situations that we know is not in alignment with our soul, that is not the true purpose for why we were born, you know, out of safety, out of familiarity, out of comfort. And so I would invite everyone to ask themselves a question. Number one, what lies am I telling myself? What, to me, the truth is profound. The truth will set you free. We're sometimes afraid to tell the truth because we're afraid of the consequences. But if you just start by telling yourself the truth, what lies am I telling myself? Even take the pressure off of having to take action and just acknowledge the truth. I'm not in love anymore. I hate my job. Just feel the truth. Acknowledge the truth. Tell the truth. Integrate the truth. Let that marinate. That begins a process inside. So what lies am I telling myself? Number two, what am I pretending to not know? In so many ways, we play a game of confusion, of like, well, I'm not sure what my purpose is. When I think deep down, we know. We have a sense. There is a part of us as human beings that knows everything, because at that deepest level, we are everything. But I think in so many ways, we sometimes play this game of confusion. Like, oh, I don't know what my purpose is, because if I'm confused, then I don't have to take action. I don't have to take responsibility. I don't have to risk the failure. And so sometimes the confusion can be a sort of a protection mechanism from taking action, so we can have the future fantasy, the hope of the future fantasy. And so what am I pretending to not know? Let's really own that. And I think lastly, for people to sit with, what are the lies costing me? What are the lies that I'm telling myself? What is it costing me? In other words, being willing to feel and acknowledge the pain of the lies. When we lie to ourselves, it's meant to be painful. And if we feel pain in our lives, emotional, mental, physical, some level of pain, that's often a sign that we're not living in alignment, that we might be betraying our truth, that we might be not honoring what's real, our true integrity. And so what is it costing me? When we lie to ourselves, it's meant to be painful. And so I like to say pain is often a blessing. Pain is your friend. Pain is feedback. Pain is a gift. But as human beings, we're conditioned from childhood to avoid the pain. We drink it away. We drug it away. We sex it away. We shop it away. We social media it away, just so that we don't feel the pain. But that just keeps us stuck. And so I think if we're willing to cultivate a relationship to the pain and use it as feedback, as a feedback mechanism, to then go, okay, what is this telling me? What is the message? How can I course correct, bring myself more in alignment with my truth? I think truth, if we really want to shift our life, we have to be willing to tell ourselves the truth. To me, fulfillment is simple, not always easy. Feel the truth, acknowledge the truth, tell the truth, live the truth. Simple, end of story. But it's because of the layers of conditioning that we grew up kind of living inside of, it can sometimes be quite challenging. So the truth will set you free. It might first challenge you. So that's kind of where I would start in terms of how I got to be doing what I'm doing and a bit of my story.
And now for these messages. Creation of the outside world really does start inside. You can feel better and receive more. Miraculous shifts happen when you align your inner world with your higher self and your soul blueprint. My clients report immediate and long-lasting results of the inner and outer world. I channel guidance and energy transmissions from your higher self and spirit team. As you resonate with the transmission, change occurs. In sessions and coaching, mentoring, I use my abilities of empathic channeling, hypnohealing, quantum resonance healing, as well as spiritual counseling, neuro-linguistic programming, and so much more. Check out my calendar for my session work and my coaching and mentoring. I would love to work in your beautiful energy. Lightshine Academy presents the 2022 Channeling Intensive. Open your divine channel to higher consciousness, cosmic intelligences, and source energy. This program begins the week of May 9th, 2022. This is an innovative and groundbreaking intensive designed specifically to connect you to spirit so you can draw down potent, useful, and transformative energy. The education you will receive will equip you to have dynamic and evidential encounters in the world of spirit. The experiences you will have will put you up close and personal with your own divine channeling team. We will meet live and online for education and coaching over the course of this 8-week program. Expect your life to change drastically as new information, energy, revelations, and love pours into you, through you, by the way of spiritual channeling. Crystalline Compton and I invite you to check it out at class.lightshineacademy.com/2022CI. This intensive is not to be missed. We hope to see you in the 2022 Channeling Intensive. Hello, my friend, it's Trisha Carr. I'm here to invite you to my coaching and mentoring portal, Modern Mystic Life. This high value, easy access portal is like having a spiritual mentor right in your pocket. You'll receive all the inspiration right there in your text messenger, and you can also access it on your desktop. I will be delivering the tools and technology that are proven to evolve your abundant life inside and out. You will receive daily inspiration, education, and practices to help you evolve your life as a mystic and a human spiritual being. Plus, you will have access to my monthly workshops in which I teach and channel cutting-edge spiritual content, and also will give guidance, intuitive readings, and attunements right there in our group setting. I worked with Spirit to co-create and manifest the best way to support you and in the easiest fashion, and here it is. I'm very excited to co-create with you too. So, welcome, my friend, to your modern mystic life. And now back to the show. Fascinating story. That's amazing. You speak of freedom and purpose. And I might say that our purpose is to be free, to feel free. And that's when we're feeling free, when we free to be who we truly are, then I guess that's the barometer. That's the governor, is that freedom sense. And it is something in the realm of self-help or spirituality where people are asking, what's my purpose? I'm an intuitive. Yeah. And that's one of the number one questions people ask intuitives. They want somebody else to give them some kind of words that could somehow contain their purpose. So I want to just pitch that to you. Like, how do you know it? How do you find your purpose? First of all, maybe it's not lost.
Right.
Is it asking the questions? How does one connect with purpose, the relationship with purpose?
First then, I'm going to go a little macro, a little bit more expansive, mm-hmm. and start from the bigger spiritual level. And then I'm going to kind of work myself down to the granular, the micro, the personal individual level of purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just to add some dimensions, because I think there's different dimensions of purpose.
Yeah.
I will tell people, first and foremost, to stop seeking your purpose. Stop it. Stop seeking your purpose.
It's not lost.
It's not lost.
That's the
it's
first
here
problem.
Right now. Stop seeking your purpose. So from a spiritual level, we are souls. As you know, we're souls. We incarnate into this human experience. We're souls having a human experience. And we incarnate in order to learn, to grow, to evolve. And every experience, every relationship, every situation, every circumstance, even if it's difficult, challenging, blissful, every experience is really part of our soul's curriculum. If life is a school for our soul, then every experience is part of that curriculum. And so we're here to learn, to grow, and evolve. And I think when we really shift our perspective from just life on a one-dimensional level, born, work, die, and that's it, to an evolutionary soul experience, that life is soul school, then we realize that the purpose of life is evolution. The purpose of life is the evolution of our consciousness, to learn, to grow, to evolve, to learn the lessons, to realize who we truly are as divine beings. And every moment of our life, every experience, every heartbreak, every death, every betrayal, every breakup is part of the invitation for us to learn, to grow, to evolve, to remember who we really are. And so if we see life from that soul perspective, and we approach life solely, so to speak, then you can't not be living your purpose, no matter what is happening, no matter whether you're a janitor, a CEO, whether you're doing what you think you should be doing or not be doing. So long as you're learning in every situation the lessons for why you're in that situation and you're evolving on a spiritual, ultimate level, you're living the purpose for your incarnation. Purpose can be lived no matter what. And so sometimes we're like, oh, I'm not doing what I think I should be doing. But if you're learning what you need to learn right now and you're evolving and you're evolving, like, are you evolving? You could be the most successful person making $1 billion, but you're no longer evolving. You're betraying yourself. You know, you're staying stuck. You're staying fragmented. You're staying contracted. Are you evolving? Not necessarily. So are you truly living your purpose in a bigger sense? Not necessarily. So every moment, regardless of what you do is not your purpose, that's a job. So every moment is the opportunity and the invitation to live purpose. You can live your purpose any moment, no matter what. So that's the bigger level. Then I will still tell people as we scale down, stop seeking your purpose. Sometimes there's a constant seeking of purpose, but the constant seeking pushes the living of it into the future. Like it's something you have to find, write down on a piece of paper, and now you're going to live that for the rest of your life. Purpose is evolutionary. And I think at different stages of our lives, different stages of our own consciousness, our purpose will only evolve and expand. And sometimes what we, from this level of our consciousness, what we project into the future, what we think our purpose should be, may not be our purpose. It might just be a conditioned projection of what we think our purpose should be. And so stop seeking your purpose. The ego wants to constantly seek and seek and seek. And this is the job of the ego, because seeking in any way is part of what reinforces our egos, our sense of identity, sense of what we think we are, not really are. It's part of what reinforces the ego's sense of existence, the ego's false existence, false sense of I'm alive. And so the constant seeking gives our egoic sense something to do, which postpones the living of our purpose now. So stop seeking your purpose. So what do you do now? Instead, just move in the direction of what lights you up. Move. You don't have to know what your purpose is on a micro human individual level. You don't have to know what your purpose is in order to live it. Instead, go in the direction. Stop waiting and go in the direction of what lights you up, of what turns you on, of what brings you most alive, of what feels most authentic to your soul. Move in that direction. When you move in that direction, I'm not saying that's going to be it, but when you move in that direction, you take a step. Life tends to reveal the next step to you as you take the step, and life reveals to you the next step in the process of living life itself. So often we try to figure out our purpose from our current level of consciousness, from trying to see what's around the corner, what's my purpose, but we often won't be able to see it from our current level of consciousness because the mechanism, the mind, which is trying to figure out its purpose, can't see the entire picture, the entire interconnected unfolding and tapestry of our life. And so when we take the step, and we take a few steps, life reveals the next step. We take another step, life reveals the next step. Every step of the way takes us on a journey. Every step of the way takes us on a journey of learning, a journey of growth. That journey of growth evolves us more. And as we take another step, as we evolve as a human being, as a consciousness, then we also become more prepared and ready for life to give us more and life to give us more. But if we don't take a step trying to figure it out over there, we don't truly evolve, and we're never really ready to live maybe what we're truly here to live. And so you end up living into your purpose in the process of living life. I'm going to bring it down even more specifically for a second. Number one, here's some questions you can ask yourself now about your individual purpose. What do I love? What turns me on? What lights me up? What makes me come alive? Go in that direction. For me, as a young boy, being the son of a minister who had 300 churches, a huge church in London, didn't grow up with a lot of money because everything belonged to the people. And so we lived behind, in London, we lived behind my father's church in a small apartment attached to my father's church. My bedroom was smaller. It was smaller than the bathroom. We could put a bed in it. And so for me, it felt like my circumstance was so limited, but my dreams were so big. And so one thing I would do was I would sneak into my father's church because it was attached. I would sneak into my father's church at 7, 8 p.m. at night with the lights off in the darkness. And as a kid, people often don't know this, but as a kid, 11 years old, imagine this 11-year-old kid, I would give seminars to the empty chairs in the darkness, literally giving seminars so to the empty chairs. Imagining thousands of people in the room being inspired. So you could say, that's what turned me on. I was living my purpose in that moment, even though there were no people. That's what made me come alive. So move in the direction of what makes you come alive. Number two, look at what specific skills you have. What tangible skills you have. Because somebody, for me, I might say, well, I love Formula One racing. But I'm not going to be a Formula One driver, not in this lifetime. Right. It's not my destiny. I haven't trained. I mean, Lewis Hamilton and these guys were doing it when they were 4 years old. And so there's a level of skill. And so second question is, what specific skills do I have? If you look at every single job that you've ever done, some of those jobs may not have been the purpose that you thought you were meant to be doing or living. But if you didn't do it, you wouldn't have learned something in that experience. And so sometimes you're in a situation, you're in a job, you're working in an environment, not because that's your destination, but because there's a certain necessary learning and puzzle piece in that moment that you're needing to integrate and learn to prepare you for the purpose for why you're here. But if you don't do that, like a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to do that. That's beneath me. I don't want to do that. That's not my purpose. But if you don't do that job, or if you don't do that experience and fulfill it, you won't learn the skill that you need to learn to be able to fulfill why you're here. And so look at the specific skills you have. I say every single thing that you have been through in your life is a part of the necessary preparation so that you can fulfill your individual purpose. It's never in vain. It will often make sense as you look back. Number three, look at the problems that you are uniquely able to solve. Look at the problems that you're uniquely able to solve. I always tell people, don't simply focus on making money, nothing wrong with money, but focus on adding value. When you're able to find a way in the world to add value to people's lives, now we add value by solving someone's pain, problem, or challenge. So when we're able to solve someone's pain, problem, or challenge, you add value. Money simply is a transference of energy, a byproduct of adding value to someone's life by solving someone's pain, problem, or challenge. So look at the pain, problems, or challenges that you have a unique affinity for, you have a unique gift to solving. Many times we don't appreciate our gifts that come easy to us because they come easy to us. And so we're like, that's not a big deal. But for someone else, it's a problem. That might show you where your purpose individually might lie. Last thing is, look at the group of people that you feel an affinity to. Maybe you feel a connection to the teenage, pregnant girls. Maybe you feel an affinity to the homeless. Maybe you feel an affinity to the dolphins. Maybe you feel an affinity to the elderly, to the blind, to the physically, challenged. Likely you feel an affinity to this group of souls because your soul and their soul have a connection. Your soul and their soul have an agreement, maybe some karma there. That might also show you the group of people you are here to serve. Don't try to figure out your purpose up front. Live your life, learn your lessons, move in that direction. Life reveals to you the next step and the next step in the process of living. Look at Oprah. There's no way Oprah could have figured out what she was, her purpose. Right. That, yeah, I'm going to be the biggest media mogul woman in the world. But she went in the direction of what she loved, and what she loved was communication. She loved communication, so she became a newscaster. As she became a newscaster, she had too much compassion that she would start crying as she read the news. And they said, well, that's not good. You can't cry when you read the news. So they fired her, gave her a demotion, and gave her, station to, I think it was in Baltimore, to do a talk show, a little talk show. They figured, let's just kind of get rid of her. The talk show blew up. Then it went into syndication. Then she's competing with Donahue. Then the rest is history. And now we have Oprah. But you couldn't have figured that out up front. Look at Obama. Imagine Obama at 19 thinking, yeah, I'm going to be president of the United States. Maybe he had a vision, but he didn't start there. He started by taking a step. So I think what's important is we take a first step. And so if you're not sure where to start, just start. Just begin. Begin by responding to the need in the moment. Many times we want to serve the planet, we want to serve millions of people, but we don't respond to the person that's in front of us that's like on the floor. We don't respond to our neighbor's call for help, but we want to reach millions of people. Start by responding to the need in the moment. And I found that when you respond to the need in the moment, you learn, you grow, you evolve, and life gives you more responsibility. That's where I would start in terms of purpose.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Wonderful. That's a wonderful formula that you really broke down very well. I love it.
Cool.
So I am curious. I know, of course, you've mentioned you write and you speak. And
sure.
What are some specific ways that people work with you? Are there other specific ways that people work with you in addition to, as an author and as a speaker?
Yeah. I mean, I used to do a lot of one-on-one coaching. That's how I started. I call it uncoaching.
Right, of course.
Uh-huh. I used to do a lot. I only work with a handful of very select clients right now. But, I'm known for a lot of the immersive journeys I do to Bali. Twice a year, I do an event in Bali called Boundless Bliss, where I take 20 people to Bali and kind of unplug them from the world and take them through a transformational unconditioning process that's very deep and immersive and experiential. It's 12 days in Bali. I have a 9-month coach apprentice program, and I do seminars and obviously my books.
And you have a book that is about to come out on paperback. It's been out for a year, and that's we've entitled this episode after it. And I want to talk about the book, but I also want to talk about the concept of the magic of surrender. This is something that's very close to my heart. Well, first of all, I'm a Pisces, so I think that's Pisces are just surrendering to everything. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But with the water element, but I find a mantra for me, or a wisdom that has been upon my life for the last several years, is radical surrender and radical responsibility at once. Responsibility being your ability to surrender, to respond. And the way that we can identify that is by first surrendering and being a part of, let's say, the universal context. So that's what I find surrender to be. I think also the way that we actually get in alignment with that freedom, which is, again, the portal to purpose and being in the that flow and the evolution of purpose. So having said that, I want you to talk about what is the magic of surrender, both the book and the concept.
Yeah, I mean, this was not the book I thought I was going to write, just full disclosure. Oh.
That's what great authors say.
I had to surrender to the book that was seeking to be written, and not simply the book I wanted to write. And it was a process of surrender, because I had all these ideas of the book I thought I should write, the book I thought would sell, the book I thought publishers wanted, the book I thought, you know, my audience wanted, you know, like, give your audience what they want. I'm like, I don't know if they want to talk about surrender. It's like going to the dentist. You kind of know you need to do it, but you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to let go. And so I wrote, I took a week, and I was bouncing all these ideas on a whiteboard, on a wall, and hundreds of ideas. Oh, that book would do great. That book would do amazing. That's a great title. That's catchy. That topic, you know, and none of them were really resonating. None of them were really authentically touched my soul that I could say with integrity, this is the book. I mean, yeah, I could make that work, and I could make that work. The only word after a week of trying to fit something into something that wasn't fitting, the only thing that really resonated was the word surrender. And I'm like, wow, surrender. And it was just undeniable. And so, cut a long story short, I surrendered to the book that was seeking to be written. And I realized that the magic of surrender had a soul of its own. And I wasn't the one that was going to write it. I was going to midwife it. I was going to just be the vessel to bring it through. And so when I surrendered to the book that was seeking to be written, everything about my life started to make sense. My childhood, my upbringing, my parents, everything I've been through is like, I'm meant to write this book. I'm the person that's meant to write the book on surrender and share that with the world. And so that was a process. So in so many ways, and a little backstory too, the way I think the book was inspired that I wasn't even aware of at the time. My mother in 2016, the end, was diagnosed with stomach cancer. And that was really challenging. And so my mother and I were like this. She was the closest person to me, you know, just the love of my life, the one that raised me. And so the one that showed me unconditional love. So hearing this was a real shocker. And I started flying from Los Angeles to London every month, literally for a week, to be with her during her treatment, during her chemo sessions. I had every agenda and intention to get her better, to fix her, to heal her with alternative therapies. Probably in a few months, I realized she's not going to make it. I realized she's not going to make it. I realized this is not happening. I mean, we were hopeful, but I started to see the signs. And it forced me to surrender my agenda in the situation and stop resisting. And when I really surrendered to the fact that she was dying, it transformed everything, because every moment I was no longer living in the future. I was no longer living in some hope. I was living fully in the now. And because of that, every moment with her became precious. Every moment with her became like sacred. Every text was the last text. Every conversation became the last conversation. Every time we had tea together became like, this could be the last time we have tea. This could be the last time I see my mother washing the dishes. So the preciousness of each moment just was so clear and apparent. And we think we have forever, but we don't, you know? And it really hit me like, wow, So what turned out to start, what started out as the worst year of my life turned out to be the best year because her and I got so close, just talking for 8 hours in chemo sessions. And I really got to the place of surrendering and thanking cancer. Like I was sad that it took this moment to have this breakthrough. But I was like, thank cancer because it's given me such a gift with my mother, you know. And my only regret was like, wow, why did it wait? Why did it take me this long and this moment to get this lesson? But this is life. And so about 6 months into the process, 7 months into the process, the doctor said, basically, there's nothing else we can do for you. In a nice way, they say you're going to die and get your affairs in order. I'll never forget that conversation in the hospital. And then we went, my mother and I went out, sat in the car, I looked my mother in the eyes, and I was very emotional because I knew she was going, but this was just confirmation. And it was another surrender. And I looked my mother in the eyes and I said, are you afraid? And she looks me in the eyes, clear as day. And she says, I'm not afraid. And I'm like, why? She says, because I know that I'm not this body. That this body is just, it's one thing to say it when everything is great and you read about it, but when you're faced with your mortality, and she said, I know I'm not this body, that this body is just a temporary vehicle for my soul. And when this body goes, I'm not dying, and I'll be with you from the other side guiding you. I'm like, wow. Like I felt her conviction in that, you know? And then I looked to her and I said, and this is, I think, where the seed of the book for the Magic of Surrender was also planted. I looked her in the eyes and I said, is there anything I can do for you in your final days? Like I wanted to be a good son. And she said, no, there's nothing you can do for me. And there's nothing I want. She said, all that I want is what God wants for my life. And I was really struck by that moment, the conviction of her surrender. Because I realized she was in such surrender. This entire year, she was in peace. She, a woman who was very emotional, she never cried. She was in complete equanimity, true equanimity, not faking it, truly at peace with, she wasn't attached to living. She wasn't attached to dying. She was just open. And that's when I saw, wow, her real great, my mother's real greatness, you know. For me, my mother's just my mom, but I realized I was in the presence of a great soul and her greatness was in her surrender. And I realized she had lived this my entire life. I won't get into the story now. And even in the way she met my father and married him sight unseen, basically. And so she had lived surrender. And so when she passed, it took me through a real grieving process. And in that grieving process, I reflected and I realized that this was the book that was meant to be written. I thought of the great ones, Jesus, Buddha, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, you know, Mandela, Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali. At some point, they all surrendered themselves to life, to the universe, to the flow. They got to a point where in their surrender, they transcended their own human limitations and life was able to live through them and work through them and manifest through them and miracle through them. And that's what moved the world. It wasn't them that did it. It was life doing it through them in that surrender. And so I thought, wow, what if surrender was the most powerful thing that we could do? See, in our culture today, as I started reflecting on the book and writing the book, I realized in our culture today, there's like a myth, this misconception that if you surrender, you're weak. If you surrender, it means waving the white flag and giving up. It means being passive, sitting there doing nothing, just waiting, you know, being non-productive. It's like an abdication of responsibility. That if you surrender, you're going to get left behind. You're going to be a doormat. You're going to be a victim. You're going to be trodden on. That you're going to not manifest your goals, dreams, and desires. That you're going to get less. And I'm actually saying no. What if surrender was the key to your next level? What if surrender was the password to freedom? What if you didn't get less, but you got more joy, more than you could even plan and imagine with your mental limited ego's capacity to manifest and create your life? What if through surrendering, you got more abundance, more than you could plan? Maybe not what you expect, but more and better and beyond. To me, that is the magic of surrender. And this is why I say magic, Magic is not some like David Copperfield, woo-woo, you know, Harry Potter. Magic is that which is beyond limitation, that which is beyond your mental capacity to even imagine. It's beyond magic, abundance, joy, prosperity, like magic. And so I tell people, if you want magic, everyone says, like when I speak and I'm in an audience, who wants more magic? Every hand goes up. No one says, I don't want more magic. Like, I want more magic. The equation, you want more magic, you got to surrender. The challenge is most of us, we want the magic, but we don't want to surrender. We want to hold on to the old. We want to hold on to what's not working. The next level of your life requires the next level of you. And the next level of you requires that you let go and release what's no longer aligned, who you were, the relationships that's not working. But what we tend to do is we want to hold on to the old out of comfort, out of self-preservation, out of familiarity, you know, staying in that comfort zone. But we don't realize by holding on to what's no longer aligned, we block our blessing and keep ourselves stuck. Mm-hmm. Surrender is letting go so that we can create the space for the new, the abundance, the space for the new relationship, the space for the new possibilities. Surrender is the password to the new. To me, surrender is the key to real manifestation. And so just to break it down a bit more, it's letting go of control, or at least the illusion of control that we thought we had. I think in the last couple of years, if we've learned anything, we see we're not as in control as we thought. And so it's letting go of the illusion of control, and control is the master addiction. The ego wants to control, and control everything, because the ego's job is to enforce its existence and identity. And control is one of the ways of being the doer of everything. That's how we do that. And so surrender is letting go of control. Okay, moving into more trust. Surrender is when we stop trying to force and manipulate life to fit into our limited idea of how we think it should be. We often have these ideas how we think our life should be, how we think, where we think we should be at a certain stage of our life. And so we often try to manipulate and force life to fit into a limited concept based on our ego's, you know, mental imagination, which is based on conditioning, which is based on the past, which is based on limitation. And so surrender is when we let go of the idea of who we think we should be. We let go of the idea of how we think our life should be, and we expand into an infinite openness. When we truly are open, so surrender is openness, it's availability. When we're truly open in that way, we take the limits off of life. There's no limit to what can manifest. There's no limit to the possibility of manifestation. We are now in an infinite position, an openness to miracles. To me, that is the magic of surrender. And so the old paradigm, last thing I'll say, is the old paradigm that we're taught in sort of self-help is get clarity, know what you want. You got to know what you want in order to manifest what you want. And I'm not saying that's not great. It's a stage. It's an important stage. Get clarity, know what you want to the best of your ability, for sure. The challenge is sometimes we get what we want only to realize that what we thought we wanted is not what we really wanted. It's just what we thought we wanted based on who we thought we were. But if we're not really in touch with who we really are because of our conditioning, then what we think we want is just going to be a conditioned version of what we truly want, not really what we truly want. And so many times our goals, unconsciously, unbeknownst to us, are projections of unmet needs from our childhood. Maybe dad wasn't there, we weren't loved, we didn't feel worthy, we felt abandoned. So we think, well, if I can have that body, if I can get that girl, get that guy, get that house, get the fame, get the Oscar, then I'm gonna finally be enough. And we still don't feel that. And so for me, in surrender, and I think we as a humanity, we've been moved into a new paradigm. The last couple of years are moving us. There's a phase transition, there's a quantum shift, moving us into a new paradigm way of being, which is all about living in alignment with the universe, living in alignment with our soul. To me, that is surrender. The shift is moving from what do I want? Because we don't question who is the I, what is the I. The real question that we can ask ourselves in the paradigm of surrender is, what is it that life is seeking to express through? What is it that life is seeking to manifest through? What is it that the universe, my soul, is seeking to make manifest through me, seeking to write through me, seeking to create through me, and to open, not put limits, open ourselves to feeling the deepest expression, the deepest impulse from our being. Then aligning ourselves with that vision. And as we align ourselves with that vision, then we can align our actions, our resources, our strategy, our money, our plan with what's authentic. Now we're living in the flow. And I think what we can manifest living in that alignment of surrender is way more than we can imagine. Way more than we can imagine. You know, if you look at some of the things that didn't work out according to plan, but they worked out better, we couldn't have planned that. We couldn't have planned that. And if you look at some of the best things, and I challenge everyone to do this, if you look at some of the best things that have happened in your life, meeting your husband, meeting your soulmate, meeting your best friend, some of the best things that have happened, they just happened. We didn't plan them. They just unfolded in the process of living. So to me, this is the invitation. As human beings, we tend to surrender when shit hits the fan. Our hair is on fire. Life is falling apart. You know, we're at the end of our rope. Finally, we say, okay, I surrender. That's when we surrender. And you, many times things unfold and things work out and we're still here. We're still alive. We stand on our feet. And even when things work out in a way that maybe someone might say, no, I've had situations that worked out worse in the moment. But in the moment, we're not able to see the entire tapestry. Because if we look back at that thing that we thought worked out worse, but if that didn't happen, we wouldn't have moved over there and we wouldn't have met that person. So in the moment, from the perspective of the ego, it might seem worse. But from the perspective of the soul, there's a different viewpoint, there's a different understanding. And so I think that surrender provides a possibility for a new way of living, a new way of creating, a new way of manifesting that isn't limited to the past, isn't limited to the ego. And so I think many of the best things that happened, we didn't plan. They happened. You know, meeting your soulmate, you went into the coffee shop and there he or she was. You didn't plan it like, 6 p.m., 7 a.m., I'm going to go into Starbucks and meet my soulmate at this date. It just happened. So the magic of surrender is that possibility.
It is the possibility of manifesting beyond your wildest dreams, which yes. means that your wildest dreams can't come true because we want to go beyond those.
Beyond.
Well, this has been just so enlightening, so invigorating, so vitalizing and inspiring. And I just love the work that you're doing, Coot. Thank you so much for shining your light on our beautiful world. You know, we have the links to be able to get the book on paperback, The Magic of Surrender and other things. And you have, there was another offer that alignment with it. Would you mention that for us, please?
Yeah, thank you. Basically, the paperback comes out, Magic of Surrender, on May the 3rd. So mm-hmm. yes, Amazon, go there.
2022. In case someone's listening later.
So May the 3rd, 2022. Basically, pre-order the book. When you pre-order the book, it will arrive to you on May the 3rd. For everyone that pre-orders the book, I wanted to give a gift. On May the 7th, 2022, I'm doing a very special 2 to 3 hour deep dive virtual online seminar. It's going to be virtual. You can do it from wherever you are around the world. It's called Reinvent Life. I'm going to be sharing the seven phases of how to reinvent yourself, how to let go of the past and who you were, how to connect to your authentic power, and how to share your gifts with the world and have impact. So it's going to be a really powerful 3 hours. I'm going to teach it personally, going to be full of value. There's going to be hundreds of folks on live, on Zoom. We're going to be face-to-face on Zoom. And so buy the book on Amazon and then go to the website. So basically, once you get your receipt, you go to this website, www.kuteblackson, my name, KUTEblackson.com/reinvent seminar, kuteblackson.com/reinvent seminar. You go there, there's a section in the middle, enter the receipt info from your Amazon purchase. That gets you access to the seminar and also a whole bunch of free gifts that you get as well. So hope to see everyone on May the 7th. Yeah. And yes. I'm reachable on social media and Instagram and all of that
kind of stuff. And if I may just add, because this The Magic of Surrender is coming out in paperback, an actual book, and that I've heard that there are studies that say that reading an actual physical paper, you know, tangible book is better for reading comprehension than, you know, we have gravitated more to digital reading, Kindle and online and, you know, having a book on your desktop or your phone. So if I can nudge people a little bit to get the actual paperback, I think it will be of benefit in all of the other ways as well.
Thank you.
Well, this has been really, again, so wonderful. I deeply appreciate you coming on to the Charmed Life podcast. And maybe I'll see you on May 7th.
Please come. No, it's going to be virtual. So you can
virtual. Wherever. Of course. Wonderful.
Just come. We'll send you a special link.
Okay. Excellent. Well, everyone, this is Coot Blackson. Thank you again for coming on. It's been wonderful. One point that I want to spend some contemplation around, expand on, because I think we all get there every now and again. I think it's healthy to be here every now and again. It's a sort of healthy skepticism. In Coot's story, where he was trying to figure out how he should move forward, how he could move forward, having little resources, the part where he's going to move to the U.S. And he says, if this is real, beyond just woo-woo theory and feel-good stuff, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember how he said it exactly. If it's real, you know, he kind of challenged the universe to show him. And what is so, again, great about that is that you are having confidence in yourself, in that you're having divine confidence and you're coming together with the universe to reason. I think it's very healthy. And I think it's good. It's a good way to make sure that we aren't clinging to illusions and we are really being willing to have responsibility, the ability to respond. It's a kind of surrender. And one thing that helps me when I'm in those moments is to, you know, think, well, what if it is real? If it is real that these principles of universal laws, surrender, spirituality, these principles in the spiritual technology that we find ourselves engaging in, you know, to create magic and to manifest, then what this all starts with is an inner sense, a state. And so when I'm asking this question, if it's real, and even having a come to Jesus with myself so I can release any false clinging or attachment, is that I figure, well, it starts with the state, the feeling, the vibration, and it feels better to feel better. So why not try it? Why not try to feel better? Why not see what it's like to raise your vibration? Because I've tried it the other ways, and I probably will again. I most certainly will again. Try it the way that feels bad. And why not try it the way that feels better? And what it comes down to, which is something that I actually don't question. I don't think I do, at least in the current place that I am. I feel like I'm not questioning it, but of course there's deep layers of trauma and illusion that are probably questioning it. But where I am right now is I do not question the fact that negative feelings, identifying to them, believing in them, believing in the fear frequency doesn't serve me. It doesn't make me more intelligent. In fact, it makes me less intelligent. It constricts blood flow. It constricts my energy, my life force energy, from flowing to the places that are of greater benefit to me. This is just accurate. This is just true. It's not a belief. Now, I'm not saying that we repress negative emotions. Absolutely not. But there is a difference between observing and even feeling negative emotions fully, experiencing them, and identifying to them, giving your sovereignty over to it, so that we believe in fear. We believe in, as I was talking recently, a few weeks ago, on this podcast, about the inner critic, believing the bad things about ourselves or about the world that fear would tell us. So we can actually separate from identifying to the frequency of negative feelings and yet still feel them so that they are beneficial to us, to really kind of soak up the signaling, the messaging, really, if you think about it, the nourishment that is actually in the emotions that may be unpleasant. They're there for a reason, but they are not the reason that we live. So why not try it? That's my message around that piece that Coot shared about challenging the universe. And it's an actual kind of surrender as well. Okay. That's what I have for you in this episode. I want to invite you to give us a review if you are so led. give us some stars or even write something, that would be amazing. Really boosts the like quotient of this podcast. Also, be sure to follow or subscribe, depending on what your app shows you, your podcast app. Share it with others if you are led to, because that's spreading the love and that's spreading our connection. And also, I want to let you know that I am very active on Instagram. I'm going live there. I'm also very active on Insight Timer, going live on Insight Timer, giving readings and teachings, as well as giving meditations regularly, about every week. So those are my invitations to you. Of course, check the description for all of Coot's offerings and invitations, his May 3rd, his May 7th, if you are listening to this prior to those dates of 2022. And get his book at any rate. The Magic of Surrender sounds amazing. I haven't read it yet. I didn't know about it until we got on this podcast, or right before we did, but I'm super excited about it because he got me all inspired. And of course, thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.